Hello,
Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, broadcasting live right now. I'm just going to test real quick. Just hold on. If not, I'm going to try something in about 45 seconds. Hopefully there's no dead air as I'm waiting about 30 seconds to see if this is going through. Okay, can you hear me out there? Hello? I'm going to try something here. Okay, I don't think that's working. I don't need an account. Hello, can you hear me out there? Hello? Okay, so we are live. Hello? Okay, great. So I had a little bit of delay on my interface here, so I can turn that off. So I know we're live and we are online, so that's great. I wanted to start the show. This is the Tornado Tony Pennycal, the co-host of the show. We had a sad news to report. Our host, Rich Bergeron, his sister passed away earlier this week. So, Rich is not going to be with us tonight. Psychic Tom Padgett will be on with us shortly. So, we have to forge on. Rich wanted it that way. I told him I would take over and, at least make my best attempt at hosting the show. We want to pass our condolences over to the Bergeron family. And I'm going to have some information in a little bit where donations can be sent in his sister's name. I'm going to pull all that information up soon, so just please give me some time. We are going to be having Psychic Tom on pretty soon, so Tom, when you get on, just give me a yell so I know you're on with me. And, well, this is the Tornado at Fight News Unlimited, Thursday night, 8 o'clock. So let's get down to business here. First thing I want to talk about is, obviously the fight results from, last week and then what we got upcoming this week. Saturday night, there should be, for you boxing fans, a pretty good treat out there for you. Pulling up my Box Rec page now, and I can first I want to go over some of the results from last week, and then we'll go forward from there with what we got coming up. So the first result I got to see was pretty impressive Saturday afternoon. Robert Stieglitz got his revenge on Arthur Abraham. Pretty impressively got his revenge on Arthur Abraham. Three rounds. Let me pull that information up here, and we'll talk about it a little bit more in depth. That was over in Germany. Both fighters are native Germans. And where was it here? There it is. Okay, Robert Stieglitz going into the fight. 44-3, 25 knockouts. They originally fought last August, with Arthur Abraham winning a close 12-round decision. So in the rematch, it was all Stieglitz from the start. You know, he caught Abraham in the beginning. You know, he had his eyes swollen shut. And at the end of the third round, he was hammering him pretty much at will till the doctor stopped the fight between rounds. And, you know, it was pretty nasty looking. But in all honesty, Abraham, who a couple of years ago fought Edison Miranda with his jaw literally hanging off almost, and, you know, he had no problem. You know, he went the whole time. Here, he basically didn't protest at all. And Psychic Tom just emailed me, and he says he can't be heard. Tom, you can't be heard, but we want to hear you. I don't know what number Tom usually dials in on, but I know on Blog Talk Radio, I know there's a 347 number that we usually give out to the guests, so I don't know if that would work. Tom, I'm gonna look on Fight News Unlimited right now, or Blog Talk Radio right now, and see if we can try that 347 number, see if that'll at least get you into the show. Because we definitely want Tom on to help carry me through this. I remember a couple of years ago, Rich was unable to do the show when I, had to kind of do it on my own. And I, after about 20 minutes, I was scrambling and I started playing music into the speakers of the computer, just trying to get a break so I could try to find other topics to talk about. Okay, here's our show here. Yes, to be determined. That's me and hopefully Tom. Tom, I don't know what number you normally dial in on, but if you can try 347-324-3228, and hopefully that'll get you in. At least I'm being heard on the show, and that's a good sign, I guess. I don't know. Maybe it's not. let's see who that is. Oh, never mind. So, okay, back to the fight results from last week. Let's pull it up here. Trying to see what interesting little tidbits I remember from Friday night. I hate when, during March, with March Madness, mainly because I don't watch it, I don't do brackets, I don't do anything like that. But a lot of times the fights get started late. So for anybody watching Friday night fights tomorrow night, this coming Friday, it's going to be on ESPN, not ESPN2. But a lot of times, you'll get, the basketball game. I swear to God, the last 11 seconds of that game took about 20 minutes. And all I wanted to do was watch the freaking fights. So that's always just a point of frustration. Another point of frustration was the fight card from Friday night. Not that the fights were not good, but the fact the decisions were atrocious. The first fight was a former world champion, Kermit Cintron. Kermit actually, grew up in Wilmington, Pennsylvania, which is not far from where I grew up. Went to William Tennant High School, which, that area, we had rivals with other schools from that area. Then Kermit, moved to Reading, that's where he's, which is about 45 minutes from where I live, about an hour or so from Philly, and, went on to a world title. But the honest fact of the matter is Kermit passed his prime. You love the guy, he's a good fighter, he's a tough fighter, he's got a lot of heart. He's passed his prime. Now, he went out there and he fought a guy by the name of Adrian Granados, fighter from Cicero, Illinois, 11-2 with one draw going into the fight. Now he's got two draws. I'll say Granados won no less than 8 rounds of that fight. Cintron just, you know, it looked like his hands were almost glued to his face. Couldn't get his hands off. You know, he couldn't do anything. And, you know, it goes to 10-round distance. The fans had it 8-2. So it goes down. And whenever you hear the first judge saying, the score is whatever, 4, it's like, you got to be kidding me. They're calling this a split decision. And Patrick Morley had it right. He had the right fighter winning, but a lot closer than it should have. He had it 96-94. John McCarthy, I don't know what was thinking. He had it 97-93 Cintron. He had Cintron winning 7 rounds of that fight. No way in hell. And then Robert Hecko had it 95-95 a draw. Also an atrocious score. I'm sorry to say, Adrian Granados won that fight. Now, in the main event, I only caught about half of it because as the fight card started so late, Mr. Sandman got a TKO win on me, and I started to fall asleep. That was a fight between Don George and David Lopez. Once again, also comes up to a draw. Now, George going in the fight, we saw 24-3, 21 knockouts. And in the beginning of the fight, I know he looked good over the first few rounds. I don't know how, you know, it went over the final few rounds. Like I said, I dozed off. All I remember the next day was a lot of outrage on the fact there was another draw on that card. Now, this one was close across the board. We had John Epperson giving it 96-94 George, Mauro Di Fiore 97-94 Lopez, and then 95-95. So a little bit, you know, more online, aside from that, you know, atrocious decisioning in the first fight. Let's see if we had anything else on Saturday. I don't think there were any cards Saturday night that I can remember. But we'll take a look anyway. Before we take a step into what we got coming up this weekend, well, we got Philadelphia fighter fought out in Tacoma, Washington, Zahir Rahim. I don't know if anybody out there remembers Zahir. I remember him coming out of the 96 Olympics, and then later that year I actually saw him down right as he was making ready for his pro debut. I bumped into him at a Philadelphia fight card. I didn't get a chance to talk to him, but it was cool seeing him down there, just, you know, hanging with everybody. And I'm like, yeah, man, this guy's coming out of the Olympics, and how cool that was. Zahir is best known for a big win over Eric Morales. This is when Morales still had a lot left, and he just boxed his ears off. Had a second-round TKO over a fighter by the name of Santos Pacquiao in Tacoma, Washington. Rahim, who hadn't fought in almost 3 years, is now up to 32-3 on 19 knockouts. And his only stoppage loss came in 2008, a fourth-round stoppage, and I remember that fight to Ali Funeka, you know, a very, very tall, lanky fighter. I definitely remember that. So let's talk about this coming weekend. Let's talk about Friday night fights, then we're going to talk about the showdown we got on Saturday. So Friday is the 29th. Yeah, Friday, that'll be the 10-year anniversary of the one fight I went to, the Bernard Hopkins-Murad Hakkar fight, which was a disaster. If anybody wants a good laugh, go Google that fight or YouTube it. Bernard Hopkins-Murad Hakkar. You'll see a guy that did the best imitation of a track meet. Okay, I'm going to see if I can call Tom. I don't know if I can do a three-way call here. Let me try this. Let me email him real quick. Excuse me, I'm just typing the message to Psychic Tom right now. I'm saying I have a... iPhone 4, but barely know how to use it. Okay, sent that to Tom. Tom, if you can hear me, I'll try. Just tell me what I got to do. I've never done that before. So, taking a look for Friday night fights. We got Brian Vera coming off a very impressive win. Actually, it was a fight I predicted here a few months ago when he annihilated Sergey Zinzurek, stopped him in 10 rounds, dropping him a couple times in the process. Vera, 22-6, 13 knockouts. Fighting guy by the name of Donatas Bonduravas. Can't say that I know much about this guy, except he's coming off, you know, 5 wins, his last 3 wins by knockout. He's 17-3 with 1 draw, 6 knockouts to his credit. Based out of Indiana, and a lot of times what you see is a lot of these fighters that fight on that Midwest circuit, and if they fight exclusively there, sometimes they step up to the plate and they are less impressive than their records, you know, speaks for. I remember going to a fight back in 1999. It was, you know, the American Dream, David Reed, another member of the 96 Olympic team, his first title defense. And on the card was Hector Camacho Jr., and he was fighting a guy named Mike Cooley, Mike the Hammer Cooley. And I remember his nickname is the Hammer because we called him the Hammered. Mike Cooley out of Indiana had like a record of like 21-10 or something like that. You know, not a great record, but it was definitely over 500. And Camacho absolutely annihilated this guy in 2 rounds. I mean, it looked like the guy never laced up a pair of gloves in his life. And he was also a fighter from Indiana, and he had fought his whole career out there on those, like, that, what they call that Midwest circuit. You know, not, when I say Indiana, I'm not talking about, I was about to say Illinois, but you know, you got, like, Indiana, Kansas, Missouri, Louisiana, a lot of these places out there where you get guys fighting for nickels and dimes, and, you know, a lot of these guys are not skilled fighters, to be honest. I mean, they're not tough, not that they don't have courage, but the training and the skill level is definitely, you know, a greater so below. So it's interesting to see how this, you know, fighter who's fought his primarily his whole career on this Midwest circuit is, you know, gonna fare. Now let's get to Saturday night. This is the one, you know, that should have boxing fans salivating over. You know, it's like you get a fight like Dottie Ward, a great fight. Well, let me just talk about one more fight on the Friday night card. We got a fighter by the name of Jackson Jr. from Brazil. He is 14-0, 12 knockouts. His last fight was a fight over Dante Craig, former Olympian, who never really panned out as a pro. He knocked him out in 1 round. That was back in January. So, you know, this kid looks like, you know, he's got a good record. And his last fight, like I said, was a former Olympian, but who never really panned out. He is fighting a guy by the name of Humberto Savigny. Humberto was a former Cuban fighter, now based out of Miami. So, you know, these guys that are Cuban fighters here, you know, they might not have a whole lot of professional fights, but that doesn't mean a whole lot. He's 10-1, 7 knockouts. His only loss was a second-round stoppage in his third fight back in 2010. Since that, you know, he's gone undefeated. He beat Richard Hall, former world title challenger, stopped him in 6 rounds. Also beat a fighter that I know in Philadelphia by the name of Defear No Fear Smith, who was a lot better than his 26-22 record. Defear is a tough fighter with a lot of skills. Sometimes doesn't get the decision in the other guy's hometown. But this is a fight where it was close, but you know, the Cuban fighter, you know, won the fight. Now on to Saturday night, which I've been promising, you know, for about 10 minutes now. We got a barn burner. We got, you know, like I said, you get some fighters and it's like Gotti Ward. And, you know, you put them in there and they just mesh. Well, here we go. It's Brandon Rios and Mike Alvarado, the rematch. Okay, Tom said he's going to keep trying. Yeah, Tom, keep trying. I wasn't able to log in through the website, so I don't know if that's screwing us up. And hopefully the show gets recorded, but I don't know if it will or won't. But, okay, back on to Mike Alvarado and Brandon Rios. They fought last year. It was back in October of 2012. Unfortunately, I didn't get to see it live because I had to go to a stinking wedding that night. And by the time I got home from the wedding, I was so tuned out of my mind I couldn't remember what day it was. It was even going into the seventh round. Two judges had it 57-57. One judge had Rios up by 2 points. That's when Rios broke through, was able to score the stoppage. But it was a fantastic fight, back-and-forth action. It's a fight you want to see again. And, fortunately, we are going to see it again. We're going to see it again Saturday night on HBO. Now, Rios is 31-0, one draw, 32 knockouts. Mike Alvarado is 33-1 with 23 knockouts. Guess it was one was two. Yep, Brandon Rios. So now you get a little bit of a revenge factor here. So you got a chance. You know, you got one fighter that's undefeated, another fighter with only one on his record, and he wants to get that back. So, fight fans, if you get a chance Saturday night, I suggest, you know, stay at home, relax, get a few beers, get a pizza. You got a good fight on to watch. Also, I just happened to see this while I was going to look on there, and I want to see if this is correct, and I think it is. Yes, it is. A fighter we just talked about last week when I was talking about bad interviews. And I said one of the worst ones I ever saw was Jim Gray back in 2004 interviewing Jeremy Williams after he got knocked out cold by Samuel Peter in two rounds. And Gray was making him watch the replay of it and give his commentary on you know, himself getting knocked out, which I thought was just definitely, you know, uncalled for. Well, that was in December 2004. Jeremy Williams had one fight in August of 2007, a full five and a half years ago, a split decision over a guy named Gary Gomez in Sandy, Utah. Well, he's coming back. 42-5, one draw, 35 knockouts, but three of his five losses have been by KO. And as much as I like Jeremy and as much as he's been a great athlete, he never had a good chin. I remember his knockout loss to Henry Akinwande with one punch in the third round, and he was down and out. Never had a good jaw. You know, just the fact of the matter. Well, he's coming back. He's fighting a guy by the name of Travis Fulton. 19-31, one draw. All 19 wins coming my way in knockout. But again, another Midwest fighter. He's fighting out in Davenport, Iowa, Elk Grove, Illinois, Hinckley, Minnesota. So you get Kansas City, Kansas, Tulsa, Oklahoma. So you never know with these fighters. Now, he has a sub-500 record, and it could be worse. I mean, I don't know a lot of these guys that he's fought against. I mean, he's got one fight a couple years ago, or last year, I should say. He lost to a guy that was 4-0. In Wisconsin. The fight before that, the guy was 1-0. So you're looking at a guy that had, you know, about 50 fights fighting the guy with one fight. Another fight that he had, he fought a guy 0-2-0. Something doesn't make sense here. That's one that says that what they call the Midwest circuit. So this guy here, like I said, 19 wins all by knockout, 31 losses, 25 of them by knockout. A little just weird, but bam, what can you say? Another thing I was wanted to wait till, you know, Tom potentially got on, but I'm gonna jump into it now. That way, you know, we don't have much dead air time, and hopefully I can keep it going long enough that Tom is able to get on. Or unfortunately, I don't want to have a short show, but I don't know how much I can babble. Fight fans, Fight News Unlimited listeners, I think you guys, after, 5 years, gotten to know me pretty well. I've been, you know, doing the show since January of 2008. Haven't missed a show yet. Strep throat hasn't kept me down. Bronchitis hasn't kept me down. Having a few beers hasn't kept me down. Sitting by the pool hasn't kept me down. Did a show on vacation one time. And I think you guys know some of the fighters that I've always admired over the years. Some of the fighters that I was not so fond of. One of my favorites, who I've talked about many times, that we tragically lost a few years ago, was Arturo Gatti. And I always was suspicious of the manner of his death. In fact, if you look at the article that I wrote, actually it was an article I wrote after retirement in 2007, and I rewrote the opening back after his passing in 2009. At the time, I said, and my exact words were, his wife, Amanda Rodriguez, is the prime suspect in his murder. And right there, it says it right there. Prime suspect, murder, not suicide or possible murder, not investigation of murder. Flat out murder. And that's what, you know, I've said that for the last 3 years. Just this past weekend, I was able to catch on the Biography Channel. And for anybody out there listening, I hope you, you know, get a chance to, you know, listen to the, you know, check out the show. It was a very good show to watch. It was called, like, something about Broken Prenup or something about Prenup. And then it was The Death of Arturo Gatti. And they had an actor playing Gatti. They had an actress playing Amanda Rodriguez. And then they had, you know, different accounts of the night that he died. And let's just say it did not paint a very flattering picture of Miss Rodriguez. It made her look like a liar, which, you know, I don't want to say anything, you know. But basically the story that was given was they were having some marital problems, and you know, they had gone away to a resort in Brazil, and they got in a fight that night as they were drinking. And the next morning, Arturo was found dead. He had a wound on the back of his head, and he had died by asphyxiation, which is, you know, strangling. Now, the two points of contention here was, a lot of people said that they think she strangled him with a purse strap. The other argument, with her argument, was he hung himself with her purse strap. Now, upon watching the show, here's basically, you know, what it came out and said. Arturo was a guy that loved the fast life. You know, he earned his money when he went out there to fight. And he spent his money. You know, they said he was a guy who loved the party life so much that sometimes after his fights, he would be going to the nightclub to dance and party, and he'd be leaking blood on the dance floor. You know, the stitches, he'd barely take time to get stitched up, and he's out there dancing. They said he'd be dripping blood, but he loved it. Now, and he also had a weakness for strippers, which Miss Rodriguez was. Now, she said she met him, they were walking dogs, and they just started talking. Every other account said they met because he went into a strip club, you know, with some friends, he was having some drinks. So, of course, you know, Arturo Gatti goes in there, and they're treating him like God, like he owned the place, you know? And so, of course, you know, she's over there, and, oh, my God, who's this guy? And they're like, oh, he's our tour guy. He's champ of the world. So they get married, and they were having a lot of problems. And Tom just sent me a link in here. Travis Fulton, who I just mentioned as the boxer, fighting this weekend, fighting Jeremy Williams, also has a MMA record of 239-49-8, part of Team Peak Performance. So now we're looking at a guy that's had almost 400 professional fights between boxing and MMA. Wow. Pretty impressive. It is. And you're also looking at Jeremy Williams, who hasn't fought in, 5 years? And 8 years ago he was knocked senseless? I don't know. Well, it should be interesting. Now, but as I was saying, back to the Gotti story here, they said, Arturo, loved to spend his money. Well, he earned his money and he spent his money. He lived the fast life. Now, they had gotten a prenuptial agreement when they got married, and basically saying, if there is a divorce, Amanda would get nothing. And she was pissed about that. I mean, pissed. And according, to the show on Biography, Arturo, to appease her, ripped up the prenup in front of her. But he ripped up a copy of it. He didn't rip up the actual prenup. That was still at the lawyer's office. But just a few weeks or a week or so before his death, he redid his will. Now, Arturo had a daughter from a previous relationship. Now, this will basically gave his daughter, Sophia, nothing, and gave everything to Amanda Rodriguez and their son, Arturo, and Amanda's young son, Arturo Jr. Now, they go to Paris, and then they go down to Brazil. They said the place they stayed at in Brazil was a little back, secluded resort. They said that was not Arturo's style. He's a Four Seasons, Marriott type of guy. He's not a back place that you're not going to see. There were no cameras there. So now they're out on the town the one night. They're both drinking, and they get in a fight. Now, Arturo pushes Amanda down. She storms off and leaves, and he gets in an argument with some of the locals. The one guy he hit and broke his jaw, hit him with a left hook, broke his jaw. Now, here's where the story changes a little bit. The original story is a lot of the locals start coming after Arturo, and he's swinging at people, and somebody hits him in the back of the head with a rock, and he's bleeding from this wound on the back of his head. He goes back to the resort with his son, takes his son back to the resort, the little toddler, and Amanda's waiting there because she got a cab ride back, and she didn't have any money, so she's waiting for him to pay the cab driver. He pays the cab driver. They go inside. She goes upstairs. She tells him she can't do it no more. She's leaving him. She goes upstairs. She comes down a couple hours later. He's on the floor. She's going to get like a bottle for the baby. She basically steps over his body, doesn't see any blood, goes back upstairs. Then a couple hours later, she finds him in the same position, realizes there's blood, and he's dead. Now, a little weird that she steps over his body, doesn't see any blood. But now, if you go back to the other account from what was told, Arturo gets in the fight, hits one person. Nobody hits him with a rock, and when he goes back to the resort, the one desk clerk comments about a tattoo on the back of Arturo's neck. And even the guy said, I looked at the glove on the back of his neck and said, oh, shit, that must have hurt. And he goes, yeah, a little bit. No record of any blood. The desk clerk also said that the cab that brought Amanda back and Arturo paid him, the guy waited for 45 minutes outside. What's he waiting for? Speculation is she might have had a guy or two in there waiting for Arturo, Now, traces of semen were found in Arturo's underwear, which leads to believe that he and Amanda had sex on the counter. And then after that, either one of the guys came out of one, or if there were multiple guys, came out hiding and jumped him and hit him in the back of the head, or she hit him in the back of the head with a bottle, incapacitating him, and then strangled him with a purse strap. They also did a test on a mannequin half of his weight. Now, Arturo, when he fought, was between one, well, he started his career at 130, but near the end of his career, he was between 140 and 147. That's a fight weight, and he always had trouble making weight. So you figure he's a guy that weighs about 165 to 170 pounds walking around. You figure that's, and even if he was out of shape because he wasn't boxing anymore, hadn't fought in 2 years, even if he was at 180 pounds, they said they used a mannequin half of his weight. So you figure anything between 75 and 90 pounds. And they said as soon as they hung it up with the purse strap, the strap snapped. Not long enough to asphyxiate a human being. They also said the position that he was in, you know, when he was found the next morning, is where they had, like, I guess, like the, almost like a little island separating, like, the dining area and the kitchen area. It, his head was, like, kind of jammed underneath it. Well, if you hang yourself and you fall, your head is not going to jam underneath an island counter. It's either going to hit it and be off to the, and your body's going to go to the side. Your head's going to go to the side. Your head's not going to jam underneath it. So it's I don't know where it's going to go from here. I know about a year or so ago they exhumed Arturo's body for a further investigation on behalf of his family. But the fact that Brazilian police, they let Amanda go, and, you know, I know she's been in a legal battle with his family, but I don't know where this is going to go. And I encourage everybody to look up that show on the Biography Channel, something about, like, Broken Prenup or something like that, but it's The Death of Arturo Gatti, a very interesting show. I know they've been replaying it a couple times. And it's definitely worth a watch, and it's definitely going to make you realize that there was foul play involved. It wasn't a simple suicide as the Brazilian police categorized it. Also, let's see, just got another email through here. And Tom and I are going to discuss this next week. I know next week, in fact, what I might do is, because I'm going to obviously not stay on long tonight, I might go about an hour or so, and hopefully the show records. I don't know if it will or it won't to be a podcast, but I might talk to Rich about maybe not doing a guest next week and letting Tom and I discuss, the Arturo Gatti thing and then what I'm about to discuss. Talking about... I don't know. Whenever I do a show by myself, I go into crime. I love crime, I guess. But Tom, if you can still hear me, if you can just quickly email me and let me know any upcoming MMA fights you want me to mention or any results from last week you want me to mention. Obviously, I didn't get the chance to see any, but I'd like to at least, make some mentions on the air. But while I'm waiting on that, another topic that was very, close to me over the years, and if anybody's been listening to me for a long time, I'm sure you've heard me discuss this topic in the past. And that was, like I said, another, this is a wrongful imprisonment over a fighter by the name Tim Doc Anderson. In fact, one of the first shows I ever did, the first radio shows as co-host, was I pulled up a lot of information, and Rich and I had a long discussion that night about this particular case. And it's one that has always bothered me. And I remember Tim Anderson as a fighter. For those of you that might not know, in fact, I sent Tom an email to Google this and to look it up, and we were going to, you know, discuss it, but unfortunately we can't get Tom on tonight. Back in the early 90s, Tim Doc Anderson, you know, he was a stellar athlete, you know, former minor league baseball player, decides to try his hand at boxing. And he's a heavyweight. He's not a world beater, but he's a good, decent scrapper. You know, he lost to George Foreman in Foreman's comeback, you know, fourth round stoppage. He was Larry Holmes' first opponent when Holmes originally came back in like 1991-ish. Holmes broke his ribs and stopped him in one round. But Tim had a winning record. He was like 27-16, you know, decent scrapper. You know, like I said, not a world beater, but, and he was entertaining. You know, he would come out there, he'd wear like a sequin cape, and you, we all know that I love sequin capes. And he would always put on a good show. So his promoter was a guy by the name of Rick Elvis Parker. And he was one of the most reprehensible figures to ever step anywhere near the sport of boxing. Not saying a lot, because there's been some, you know, shady characters around this sport. Rick Elvis Parker was a promoter, and he believed his own gimmick. One of the things he believed was a guy that he was nearly 400 pounds, looked like Elvis. Now, we all know I love Elvis. I mean, I go to the little Christmas tree lot where I work, and I'll dress up as Elvis, and, you know, and I'll sing and everything. I look nothing like the guy, and I sound even less like him. But Rick Elvis Parker believed that he looked like Elvis, and he was a promoter's promoter. He was a hustler. He was also a heavy cocaine addict. Now, he has Tim Doc Anderson as one of his fighters, and he's promising Tim the world. He's promising, you know, he was keeping so much of his earnings and putting it in a way in like an investment or something or something or something. And he booked him to do a talk at a school, an anti-drug talk. And Tim, when he got there, goes to Parker's limo, and this anti-drug talk they're about to do, there's the promoter and the promoter's flunkies snorting lines of coke. Quality guys they are. So now Rick Elvis Parker's main plan, he was always involved in the hustle, always involved in the scheme. And the fighter he latched onto was Mark Gastineau, very well known as a defensive end for the New York Jets, for years owned the single-season sack record, tries his hand at professional boxing. Well, Gastineau can't fight worth a shit. Big guy, strong guy, but that doesn't make you a good fighter. And he can't fight. Now, Elvis, not the real Elvis, Rick Elvis Parker decides, he claims that he had a verbal agreement with George Foreman's team that if Gastineau could get to 12-0, he would set up a fight with George Foreman, which would be worth millions. This was, you know, after Foreman had already had the loss to Holyfield, but, you know, he was popular as hell, you know, put up a gallant fight with the heavyweight champion of the world right there. This is before he beat Michael Moore to win the title in 94. So they want Gastineau to look good. And what they're doing is they're basically, you know, paying some of his opponents to take dives. Sets up a fight on USA's Tuesday Night Fights with Tim Doc Anderson because Anderson has a loss to Foreman. And basically what they want is Tim Anderson to take a fall and then come on and say that Gastineau hits harder than Foreman. And Anderson, you know, is sitting there, and Rick's promising him all this money, and he's going to pay him back everything he owes him plus an extra $500,000 if he goes along with it. And Tim agrees to it. And then on USA's Tuesday Night Fights, right before the fight's about to start, at the weigh-in or whatever. It was even after that because Parker would have found a replacement. It was literally shortly before the fight, maybe minutes before the fight, and Anderson said, "No, I'm not doing it, and Mark, I'm going to hurt you." And they're like, "No, what do you mean? No, you can't do this." Well, Anderson goes in there, kicks the shit out of Gastineau on USA's Tuesday Night Fights, And they said Parker was fuming. They said his nostrils were flaring. He was so mad. 6 months later, they have a rematch in Oklahoma, Midwest Circuit. A lot of times now, that's another reason boxing needs a national commission, because places like Oklahoma, Minnesota, Indiana, Kansas, Louisiana did not have commissions or did not have strong commissions. So this fight, Tim Anderson's cornermen are not there. He has strangers working his corner. They're feeding them. They didn't use the bottled water that he brought. They had water in paper cups. Sound a little fishy? Anderson claims that during the fight, he starts getting lightheaded. He's getting dizzy. Starts getting nauseous. Well, Mark Gastineau knocks him out and gets his revenge. They leave Tim Anderson in a pile of vomit in the locker room. Leave him there. The janitor finds him, takes him to the hospital. And basically they're saying, you know, you were drugged. Now, a decent thing, a decent human being. You know, I like to do some cooking, and sometimes I'll use different ingredients, or I'll just try different things. If I get someone coming over for dinner, and I make something, and they get sick, and they say, man, well, what did you use? What did you cook? What did you make? What ingredients did you use? And I'll say, well, you know, I use this. Well, maybe I use like a peanut oil, and they have allergy to nuts, you know? But I'm going to let them know everything I did. Rick Parker, all he did was make threats to Tim and Doc Anderson. Threatened to kill his quadriplegic sister and her kids. Threatened to kill him. And, you know, and Tim at the time was, you know, writing a tell-all book called, like, Liars, Cheaters, and Whores, and about the sport of boxing. It was going to be a tell-all. And Rick Parker, you know, was obviously going to be one of the main culprits in it. Well, he had a couple of his henchmen beat the shit out of this guy with a baseball bat. The guy couldn't leave his room for months. He was puking. He was sick as a dog. Now, what kind of a human being does this? Well, they said, basically all the doctors said, you got to find out what you were drugged with, or you're never going to recover. So he went to Parker's hotel room. They set up a meeting. Parker's sister and his son accompanied Tim Anderson to this meeting. Right, exactly. So Tim and Anderson and Elvis Parker went into a back room. They discussed it. And Rick Elvis Parker threatened to kill Tim Anderson's sister, her family. And, well, Tim said the next thing he remembers, he rolled the 350-pound Rick Parker over and saw 8 bullets in him. Well, that one bullet, that last bullet Tim had, he was going to use it on himself. Put the gun in his mouth and pulled the trigger. Didn't go off because it wasn't his time yet. I mean, I believe God has a time and a plan. I mean, I'm not a Bible thumper. I'm not, you know, going to preach to anybody, but I think there was a plan, and it was not his time. And he went down, called the cops, waited for him to show up, and said, I want the death penalty. I'm suffering here. You know, I'm sick from this poison that was put in my system. I just want to die. Well, of course, that doesn't happen. And, of course, they put him on trial. Now, down in Florida, where this happens, basically a murder, you either get acquitted, not guilty, or life in prison, no possible parole. Those are the only two choices for this case, at least. And the jury found him guilty. And now they realized that there was no chance of parole. And they even said they even wrote the judge a letter. The jury foreman wrote him a letter. And saying, no, we want leniency for this guy. We did not realize. We were blindsided. The guy's still in prison. This has been since, I believe, 1995. Almost 20 years of his life. He's in prison. Okay, May 1996 is when it happened. And he's been in prison ever since. Tell me that's not wrong, people. Tell me it's not wrong. And I know there was even a couple lawyers that were trying to take the case pro bono, asking for no money. Knew what the injustice was here. Terrible. Absolutely terrible. But nearly 20 years later, this man, or 15 years later, this man still sits in prison. But at least on the positive side, and the one article I was reading on it today that was written just a little over a year ago, they said he said it was in self-defense, which I believe, but he has a positive spirit. And more than anything, I think that's important, you know. I mean, the guy was screwed, but he has a positive spirit. And, I mean, you got to admire that. We'll discuss this more next week. I know Tom sent me an email that it's fascinating, and yeah, I agree that it is. And we'll discuss it more in depth next week. I'm going to send Rich an email, and you know, and I'm going to see if he's booked a guest. You know, obviously we'll go through with it. But if not, you know, I mean, there's a couple topics that I think Tom and I can really discuss and really kind of not debate per se, but you know, we can kind of just you know, go back and forth on. The one I wanted to talk about was sports journalism. We were talking about it last week, and I, you know, sent some of my older articles, you know, just because I wanted to, you know, get his opinion, see what he thought of them. And we were just discussing on proper headlines. And I actually sent an email to my friend Iceman John Scully today. Iceman's been a guest on our show at least three or four times since I've been doing it. We usually get him about once or so a year. And he had sent an article out to a group of people about a week ago, and he was asking, you know, for opinions on an article he wrote on Bernard Hopkins, this after Hopkins' most recent win over Tavares Cloud. And I emailed him back, and I said, listen, I said, I told him, I said, because I've read a lot of other anecdotes and stories he wrote for, like, the book that he's compiling together. Which, Iceman, if you're listening, I'm still waiting on it, buddy. But Iceman's put a book together, and I always enjoyed his writing style because it's very easy to follow. It's got good humor to it, and he actually kind of writes almost like he talks, and you know it's enjoyable. It's easy to follow, but as I told him today, it's very tangible. So I sent him a response back, and, you know, I said, not only am I going to read it as a boxing fan's perspective, well, that's important because most of the people who are going to be reading this are boxing fans, but I'm also going to read it from a journalist's perspective and a news writer's perspective and a boxing writer's perspective. So I sent him some of the same articles I had sent to Tom last week, one of my fight coverage cards from a few weeks ago at the Valley Forge Casino. Than the one I covered last year at the South Philadelphia Asylum. And, you know, he was going to check that out. So I sent John Scully a response with regards to his article saying, you know, I finally got a chance to sit back and read it in depth. And I told him I found it well-organized and informative. And I read it both as a fan and as a fellow boxing writer. And I think a part of his concern was structural and grammatical errors. And I told him I really didn't see any. I think there was a missing hyphen in there. But that's what editors are for. When you write stuff, you got to get a good editor. That's what I miss sometimes. And I told him, you know, as Tom and I were discussing, that in my writing because it made the people feel like they were right there. And it showed an appreciation because I've been involved in the fight game as a competitor. And that's the one thing I told to Tom. I said, after reading some of his articles, you know, as Tom and I were discussing, you know, I told John that make his article feel tangible so the reader can feel the action and grasp the information. And he did that. He captured that. And that's what I enjoyed about his article on Bernard Hopkins. It has substance, but it's easy to read. kind of important, because if you're reading something, even if it's good, but it's hard to, you know, the words are too big, or it doesn't paint the right picture, then you're not going to enjoy it. I want to read a good boxing article, and sometimes I want to read it from a third-person perspective, from a person just watching, like, omnipotent, watching it from the outside. Sometimes I want to read it from a first-person perspective, someone that's in there, what it's like to be in there, but you want to feel them punches as they're coming at you. You know, you want to almost feel the adrenaline in their stomach. I think Iceman Scully captures that. He captures it from, you know, the third-person perspective, but he also captures it as the first-person perspective. And that's a good writer. And so he was also a pretty damn good fighter. I also follow up on some emails Tom just sent me a few minutes ago. Okay. I asked Tom, you know, for some, you know, recaps on the MMA stuff, because, like I said, I really didn't get a chance to catch any of them. And he sent me one, I guess it was the one UFC last week. Here's my preparation. I'm not really sure which one it was, but Tom said, it's been quite a week. Nick Diaz was complaining that George St. Pierre weighed 170.9, and thus Diaz was at an unfair advantage, and that he deserves an immediate rematch. This is from the guy who wants to move up and fight middleweight champ Anderson Silva, giving up 15 to 20 pounds. Go figure. Tom, it is pretty funny, because you get some guys, when they lose a fight, they got to complain for the sake of complaining. Well, yeah, I mean, he was bigger than me, and that wasn't fair. But I'm going to move up in weight, and I want to fight so-and-so. He wants to fight so-and-so. He wants to fight Anderson Silva because he knows that's where the dollar signs come in. It's all about the money, right? See what else Tom's got to say here. Okay, also, Misha Tate, our former guest, is fighting April 13th. Okay. If she wins, she will be a coach on the next Ultimate Fighter opposing Ronda Rousey. Pretty interesting. Not too shabby. Let's see what else. Okay. Oh, and this is one where Tom emailed me with regards to Rick Elvis Parker, that fine, wonderful human being that the world misses so much. They said the guy had a toupee that was so bad that they said even people used to laugh at it, and it had a ponytail. They said, you know, but he thought he looked like Elvis. I don't remember Elvis ever having a ponytail. I'm an Elvis fan. But Parker was accused of fight-fixing or attempting to fix at least a dozen fights, according to the L.A. Times. Doesn't surprise me. Doesn't surprise me at all. God, that's a piece of shit. Well, let me, once again, just drop my phone here. Sorry about that. Let me look up one more thing online. Okay. Oh, I just see a thing. I just saw a headline here. UFC champion George St. Pierre cast as villain in the next Captain America movie. I know they're making another Captain America movie, but oh, that's pretty cool. Hey, the thing is, if you got charisma and you can, you know, take your popularity to other places, by all means do it. By all means do it. Let me try one more thing here. Now my computer's acted up. Okay. Well, Tom, if there's anything, if you're still listening, if I haven't bored you yet with my trash talking, if there's anything in the world of MMA coming up this weekend, or anything that I should know about to mention, shoot me an email, let me know. I'll give it a shout out on the air. And let's see what else we can talk about here. Let me pull up some of the things I was gonna originally discuss this week. I know I caught a couple of them. Oh, I was gonna invite Tom to do a segment this week called "Do You Remember?" And basically, it was just going to be two guys with uncanny memories about the details of some of the most obscure fights in boxing MMA history. And just mentioned something like, "Hey, man, what was the craziest thing you've ever seen? Or do you remember a time this happened? Or did you ever see a fight when something like this happened?" But unfortunately, like I said, we had trouble getting Tom on tonight. And like I said, I think part of it was I couldn't log on to Blog Talk Radio. Thankfully, I know at least our show is airing live. I don't know if it'll record or not, but, you know, I'm sure nobody's going to want to download this episode and listen to my big mouth for over an hour. I love little anecdotes about the sport of boxing. Everybody out here knows I've been a boxing fan since I was a little kid. And reading certain things, like, you just find them funny. Like, I don't know if anybody knows this, but back when he was an amateur, and he admits to this, back when he was an amateur, Evander Holyfield got disqualified in a fight for biting an opponent. Who would have known so many years later he'd have been involved in one of the most infamous incidents of biting ever? And not just in the sport of boxing. I'm talking about ever. You know, Mike Tyson was doing his best George the Animal Steel impersonation out there on him that night. Another thing, you know, that was I was talking about actually to a gentleman I referenced a short while ago, Iceman John Scully. He's one of my, you know, favorite Facebook friends out there. Because he'll write, you know, things on Facebook and he'll put, like, topics out there and I always try to comment on them and, you know, just talk to other fight fans. And we were just talking about, like, different ironies in the sport of boxing. And he said, you know, one of the things he remembers, you know, growing up was watching fights on premium channels that he didn't have through the squiggly lines. And I remember doing that myself. The one fight I definitely remember doing that was Foreman Moore. I was in my first semester at Lock Haven when that fight happened, and I didn't have HBO, but I wanted to know what was going on, so I put on HBO and I listened to it and tried to watch it through the squiggly lines. He was talking about the one he remembers was Pryor Arguello won, and he was like running home over a mile just to get there to watch it through the squiggly lines. And then we started just talking about fights from back in that era and just different things we remember about being fight fans. And the one of them that I remember from that era is watching a lot of fights on Saturday and Sunday afternoons. Loved it. Loved those Saturday afternoon cards. I remember even as a teenager when they still would have them every few months in the afternoon, I remember getting my TV guide on like a Tuesday. And the first thing, because I didn't have internet, you know, I would get my TV guide on a Tuesday and I would go to Saturday and Sunday and I would look to see what was on Wide World of Sports and CBS and all that. And then get disappointed if there wasn't a fight. Then get fired up if there was. But like I said, I remember growing up in the late 70s, early 80s and watching so many great fights on Saturday and Sunday afternoons. And I was like, I was saying, great guys. Sugar Ray Leonard, Boom Boom Mancini, you know, legends. Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, Tommy Hitman Hearns, great fighters. One of the ones that I remember was the rematch which was the fight of the year, and one of the best ever, to be honest. If you go back, another fight I'm going to tell my fans to Google and watch. Matthew Saad Muhammad in his rematch for the light heavyweight championship of the world with Yaki Lopez. And as a little kid, I was about 3 and a half when that fight happened, watching it with my dad. And my favorite color was the color blue. Yaki Lopez was wearing blue trunks. I was so excited. I was rooting for the guy in the blue shorts. And my dad was like, no, we're rooting for Matthew Saad Muhammad. I'm like, no, and I kept saying blue shorts, blue shorts. Well, Yaki Lopez was kicking his ass. Had him all but out. Saad came back. Won the fight by knockout in the 14th round. My dad, for years, teased me about that fight. He used to call me Tony Saad Muhammad. I would cry. I would cry. Because he beat the guy in the blue shorts. And as I was writing all that to the Iceman, and we were having a good laugh about it, I said, irony works in such a weird way. Years later, I'm training in Philadelphia. Who's one of the trainers working with me at my gym? One of Matthew Saad Muhammad's old trainers, Reverend Thompson. And when we asked Rev about that fight, and Rev said, after about, I think it was like the 8th round, where Saad got hurt pretty bad, and Lopez was teeing off on him. And they said Saad came back at the end of the round, and he sat on the stool, and he was out. I mean, his eyes were rolling. He was out. And in that 60 seconds, he came back. They said he basically, his eyes just cleared, and he was back. He was coherent as can be, and he was out there ready to fight, and he went on, and he, you know, kept the title. You know, he won the fight, kept his title. And then about a year later, you know, Rev Thompson, you know, was working the gym, and he was helping out, great guy, and he told us that story. A year later, Matthew Saad Muhammad himself came down to the Marian Anderson Rec Center and was meeting the guys and, you know, talking to the guys and bullshitting with the guys. And I remember one of the things he told me was, like, he was watching me work out, and he came over to give me a few tips. And the first thing he says is, you're short. No shit, thanks. I know that. You don't think I know that? He's like, you're a short fighter. So you got to step in with the jab and step in with the jab and fire a right hand. Okay, I've been doing this about 5 years now. I think I have that part figured out. But he's such a nice guy. Then he was like, I usually, because I'm a former champ of the world, I go to a place, I tell him, you know, for me to, you know, help a fighter out like that, I'd charge him $1,000. $1,000? Tell me to throw a double jab right hand? But, you know, but he's such a nice guy. But he goes, but since you're with the Rev, you got it. This one's on me. You know, it was funny. It really was. You know, I just love to get out of the Philadelphia gyms. And even my dad will tell you, because, you know, we used to drive down together. My dad would help out down there, and he would videotape some of the workouts for some of the guys and videotape some of the sparring sessions. So, you know, we could, with a VHS camcorder, by the way, just so we could watch him over again and, you know, pick up on our mistakes. And then he did a lot of the, like, some of the work down there and building the brackets so we could hang our bags. So we would always, like you said, ride down there together. And he'll tell you, I'd like to get him on the air with us again sometime. But one thing my dad will tell you is I used to like to stay hang at the gym. You know, I was like a gym rat. You know, we would get there around 5:30, 6 o'clock, and I would do my jump rope, I would do my shadow boxing, you know, get in the ring, spar a few rounds, or work the mitts a few rounds. I'd go do some work on the bag. Then I'd do some calisthenics, speed bag, and I'd be done. You know, you figure work out about 90 minutes, and I wouldn't want to leave. You know, I would want to sit there and watch other guys get trained, or just talk to the trainers, or talk to the fighters, or talk to, I would talk to anybody. I would talk to the winos that would come in and slur. You didn't know if they were punch drunk or just drunk. Because there was knowledge you could learn from all these people. And I loved it, and I still do. And I think that's why I do the show. And that's why I have all these little anecdotes and little stories I think I could be a good broadcast journalist. I'd have to learn to cut down on my language sometimes. Like the one time Rich and I covered the first Steve Cunningham-Thomas Adamack fight, and we put it on our little webcam, and, you know, we were doing the voiceovers, and Cunningham got dropped, and I let out a big, oh, shit. I don't know if HBO would like that too much. I think I could be okay. I don't use, like, big fancy, you know, puns like Larry Merchant would. He'd come out there and, like, in the winds of time, and when the seashore blows out a certain distance, you could still hear the applause. I don't know what the hell that means. I'd come out there and say, he was a damn good fighter and everybody loved him, and that's why we'll always remember him. But, you know, it's still fun. And, you know, before we get off the air tonight, like I said, I'm hoping that this show is getting recorded. At least I know it is live on the air. So if anybody's listening now, I said, yo, what's up? Let me just try to find one more piece of information, and then I think it'll be best to call it a night. I really don't have, no. Come in. Oh, by the way, news out there, I still got to look into it, but we might be seeing a, we don't know what's going to happen with the Floyd Mayweather-Robert Guerrero fight. Robert Guerrero was arrested today for trying to carry a gun on an unloaded gun with empty magazines through the New York airport. And we know, let's just say New York is a little bit crazy with some of the laws right now. You got Mayor Bloomberg out there, and he's a little on the nutty side. He doesn't want you to drink sodas. He doesn't want you to, you know, have big candy bars or whatever else. And he basically wants to infringe on everybody's rights. But Guerrero's still a stupid move on his part. Release those over cognizance, and hopefully this will not affect his fight with Floyd Mayweather. That was breaking news just brought into my office. So let me see if I can find this final piece of information, and then we will call it a night, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, here we go. This is with regards to Rich's sister, Meredith Bergeron, who passed away earlier this week. Only 22 years old, you know, born in 1990, passed away this year. Tom and I both sent condolences to Rich, but I don't know the full details. What it says on here is donations in Meredith Bergeron's memory may be made to the New Hampshire Humane Society, 1305 Meredith Center Road, Laconia, that's Laconia, New Hampshire, 03246. Please stay tuned for more information on a foundation I wish to create in her name called Meredith's Trail, that will be set up to help kids and young adults who love horses get more access to riding opportunities and horse ownership. So once again, you know, Rich isn't on the show tonight. We had a little bit of problem doing the hookup. Like I said, Tom was unable to dial in. He tried several times. And I know the show is at least airing live, and I'm hoping that, you know, it records, but if not, you know, anybody that's listening tonight will hear it, and we can mention all these pieces of information again. But I'll repeat this one more time. For Rich Bergeron's sister, rabble-rousing Rich Bergeron, Sister Meredith passed away this week. His donations in Meredith Bergeron's memory may be made to the New Hampshire Humane Society, 1305 Meredith Center Road, Laconia, New Hampshire, 03246. Please stay tuned for more information on a foundation I wish to create in her name called Meredith's Trail that will be set up to help kids and young adults who love horses get more access to riding opportunities and horse ownership. So, I guess we'll leave it at that tonight. Condolences to Rich and his family. And, we'll be back next week. I'm going to email him and basically say, if we want to go over the topics that we didn't get a chance to discuss, tonight. I know Tom and I wanted to go over a few of the items of information. And it might work out even better if the show did record, so that way anybody that downloads the show from tonight can anxiously await part two, which will have the whole cast discussing the topics I went over tonight. Well, I thank you all for listening. As Tom would say, enjoy the fights. And as I always say when I'm checking out, hasta la vista, baby. Have a great night. Thank you.